Good morning, all. It is Wednesday, July 27. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. And a very good morning to you, wherever and however you are listening. And we're just rolling through the guests' hosts with Clarkey on leave over there, sunning himself in Europe. Still haven't heard from him, by the way. But joining us today, the great Matthew Burkey. Morning
to you.
Good
morning. He's actually staying in my chateau at the moment. Just down near Lake Como, I think it is. Wouldn't that be nice to be over there at the moment? Mind you, it's belting out. It was like 40 degrees the other day, sadly, the world's falling apart over there. So hopefully everyone's okay over there. But for those doing it tough, sunning themselves with a bit of canola oil and crisping up, I'm sure they're enjoying it down in the south of France. And
you know, yeah, you can see him putting that oil. Is it the reef oil?
The reef
oil. Coconut oil.
Yeah. Remember Kramer? Remember he sat on the roof and he put like vegetable oil on there? Something's burning? Good to be here, boys. Good to be here. Plenty on in the world of sports still. And then obviously Comm Games comes up in a little while and the world of sport just keeps going and we get to talk about it, which is great.
Morning to you, Lozza.
Morning, boys. Good to have Burkey in. Brings plenty of energy, as usual. Clarkey wouldn't be missing us over there. He'd be having a ball, and so he should be. But, plenty happening in rugby league. We discussed what was happening at Manly yesterday. Love to get everyone's reaction to what Des Hasler and Daly Cherry-Evans said yesterday at their press conference. I thought they were very impressive. I thought Des in particular spoke very passionately, very supportive of being inclusive and having diversity at Manly, but also being supportive of the players who have decided to stand down at the same time.
It was statesmanlike by Des, wasn't
it? It was very powerful, I thought. You know, I thought it was very powerful. It's a shame that no one from management was there to support them. They threw Des and Cherry Evans out there. But I think if you needed a man for a crisis, you're looking for an experienced leader. And while most leaders have experienced everything in sport, this is probably something that Des hasn't experienced before, but I thought he handled himself extremely well. And again, in those situations, you need someone with that experience, that statesman-like figure, and Des provided that yesterday for the Manly club. I mean, if you wanted someone to be in charge, you needed a Wayne Bennett or a Tim Sheens or a Des Hasler, someone, or Craig Bellamy, someone like of that ilk to be there fronting that conference yesterday, and I thought they did a terrific job.
But you're right, though, in the non-management side of it, when he signs on as coach, he's thinking, you know, my issues are going to be coaching issues, inclusive, or the inclusive nature of incorporating everyone into the game. And you're right, there was emotion there yesterday, and I suppose there had to be emotion as well, because you, not that you had to believe it,
but it was genuine.
It was genuine. That's the word. And you're right. And he did himself well. Cherry Evans did as well. Struggling to still find a team? Have they got a full complement, Loz?
They have, I must say, Burkey. I don't know much about a couple of their players. In fact, I've never heard of two of them.
Okay.
The wingers that have been named, Smalley and Secchi. But they still will be able to put out a decent side if this is what they run out with.
Yeah.
Taking seven players out of a side,
that's massive.
It hurts your chances.
Yeah.
And they're taking on, you know, not a team at the bottom of the competition table either. They're taking on a team like the Roosters, who are currently in eighth position, and they're in a, you know, four-way fight for that eighth spot or to play finals football.
Yeah.
You know, there's other teams Manly, Raiders, Dragons, just outside, just underneath them, that are pushing for a spot in the finals. So this is an important game for Manly, but one they could find difficult to win.
Understanding where the position that these boys come from, and is it going to do their chances, you know, and what are we now, five games left to the end of the season, six games left to the end of the season? Just that one little hiccup, if they do lose, could it derail their chances to make sure they stay in that top eight?
Well, I sort of look at it, Burkey, and think that you probably need 28 points to play finals, and that's still not going to guarantee you a position, but I think 28. So currently they're on 20. So for mine, they have to win at least four games, you know, possibly five out of six. So if they lose this game, they're nearly going to have to win their remaining five games. But that's relying on other people to lose as well.
Yeah.
So it then starts to become
and the run home
an
for
issue
them?
For them. Not too bad. Not too bad compared to some of the other clubs.
Sure.
They've got Parramatta next week at home. Then they travel to the Gold Coast to play against the Titans. Of course, it's just refreshing. Then they've got the Sharks at home, the Raiders away, and the Bulldogs at home, Bush.
So it's not too bad. But this game here was going to be important because Manly got such a decent record.
Yes.
I call it brookie still.
Yeah.
I know it's Four Pines Oval, but it's brookie to me. And they're a different football team at home. And taking on the Roosters, this is a game they would have thought about for a while.
Targeted.
Yeah. And we can beat the Roosters. And, you know, coming into this game now weakened, and the Roosters are hitting form at the right time. They're getting a couple of players back. Just doesn't seem as though the stars are aligned for Manly. Although we've seen plenty of upsets this season already. We saw what the Tigers were able to do last week up there in Townsville. Even though they didn't get the 2 points, their performance was very, very good, and they deserve to get the 2 points. That was their game.
Isn't it the most frustrating thing in the world when you just can't get that W beside your name? And you're getting hammered in the press, and someone's pushing a pen saying, you know, they're not putting in, and you just go, well, hang on, come to training, have a look at the work we're doing. You talk about stars aligning. You're just off. It could be one pass. It could be one kick. Obviously, you've got another team that's going to have a game plan in front of you and going to try and impart their game plan on you. But you just can't get the W beside your name. And it's the most frustrating thing in the world. And it eats away at you. And then, you know, I mean, James Tamo, well done to him. He stands up there week in, week out and gives a pretty honest appraisal of where he is and can hold himself and can hold his head up high. But last week, like, you can't go back now and say, okay, boys, we'll give you that 2 points. Kick a goal
you can't do that.
From Val Holmes doesn't count.
No.
But it was there. It was there for them taking.
From I know you watch league, but you're a union man. From a union perspective, when you saw that decision, what did you think?
Did you
agree with the decision from the bunker?
No. First thing for me was eyes on the ball. So the player in question watched the ball the whole way. And I was listening to Brandy Alexander talk about it afterwards, and the boys were blowing up deluxe. Because you know that if you want to do something sneaky, your eyes have got to be like targeting, if you know what I mean, you're on the field. You know where the referee is, you know where the ball is, you know where the other player is. And at that stage there, as the ball went up, he didn't, and the player in question who did the escort, didn't...
Kapoa.
Didn't run, then turn and change his angle in front of Felt, I think it was, at the same time. Yeah. He basically he ran and his eyes were on the ball. So I don't think there was any stage that he actually, and you see like some of the obvious ones, you know, when you see that, and the blokes are looking across, left, look left, look, and then just, and lean in with a hip and shoulder. And so that was just got it massively wrong. Mm. And then the blurred lines of, was the play stopped? Are you allowed to play? Can you call a captain's call when there's no call being made? Type number. So, at all, you talk about the stars align. They imploded for the Tigers in that last one couple of seconds of that game there. So, you know, they should have got that points, and it changes the whole demeanour of the club. It changes the whole demeanour when you go to training or you do your recovery the next day.
I'd love to get your thoughts, Berkey, because Union for me, when I watch it, my young bloke plays Union. Yep. I get confused because I don't know what the rules are, and I don't know why the referee.
You'd be blowing up deluxe, wouldn't you?
I just got no idea.
Blowing up deluxe because we were laughing the other day at the Origin, saying there would have been if you applied the rugby union rules to Origin, there would have been six players on the field. Like it would have been red card and yellow card everywhere.
But as a union man, when you now watch league,
yeah,
is it becoming a little bit more confusing for you?
To watch.
And watch and see and understand why these...
To rugby league or rugby union?
Yeah, rugby league.
Or
is it okay? Because what we're sort of thinking now is that we're becoming a bit more like rugby union.
Yeah.
Because we're getting a bit more technical. Well, whereas the game used to flow a bit more and
correct.
The referees allowed a little bit more to happen rather than just refereeing to the laws of the
correct.
Game.
Correct. And when we've had the conversation on the run, it never happened to me. But the conversation on the run was like, you know, Daly, I saw that punch from the referee. I saw that punch. Keep your hands in your pockets. Otherwise, you're off. So there's none of that anymore. You know, that was the old club rugby type stuff. And I think that because it's big business now and you know, and even though they still get it wrong, like on the weekend, it's big business. So that's why they go to that nth degree of doing it. You know, I know I listen and I watch it, and I listen to Joe, and when he says play it in real time, because in slow motion anything just looks, you know, worse type thing. So in real time, is it reactionary? Is it intentional? There was that element, and I was out the test match the other day watching the Aussie game against England, the SCG. Behind me, it was two blokes I played with, Phil Waugh, Al Baxter, up in the forwards. And I turned to him and said, mate, has it been this slow always, like in our scrums? And the scrums used to just morph together in, out, and play, where now it's becoming...
Oh.
It's becoming difficult to watch because,
it's outrageous,
you know, the referees talk to the front row inside the change room. They get him in. They have a big powwow. Yeah, you know, captains, bring the front rows over, blah, blah, blah. And they stand there for a couple of minutes and they're doing this one. They're doing the finger pointing. And then the first scrum goes down and they're doing more finger pointing. And as someone said the other day, it's the only game where a referee stops to tell you what to do in your position. Mm. It's like, yeah, everyone else is like, you know, do your best type thing. I'm not going to give you any hints. So they've got to fix that up. From a rugby league perspective, there's still that element of just a bit of blasé about it, which I love. Mm. Let it go. That origin, you know, the other day. Look, if it's a hit around the head, if it's a blatant hit around the head, and I know we've chatted before saying, mate, that's 6 weeks, and you go, mate, no, that was a jet. Got him on the shoulder. And we're going, how can you say he's got him on the shoulder from there? But I love the brutality of the game. I think that's outstanding. And that origin was that perfect picture of watching football the other day. You know, I don't know if you saw Israel Dagg, the All Blacks World Cup winner, fullback. A little bit of time after me, but he came out the other day and said, you know, if you want an advertisement for playing footy, look at the origin. You know, Super Rugby's not delivering at the moment. I think that's on the back of perhaps the All Blacks losing to Ireland as well the other day. But, you know, his comments sort of, you know, struck a chord with a lot of people.
You know, this Manly story is a huge story when it's front page of the Sydney Morning Herald, and the Manly to wear jersey with pride is the headline there on the front page of the Herald. What about this one? And we'll have Bulldog in for his regular slot, but it'll be just after 8 o'clock this morning. We've got Damien Cook just after 7, but he's done an investigation along with his colleague Brent Reed, and it's front page of the Daily Telegraph. Hugh knew about this. Hollywood stars, sponsors, NRL officials, everyone except the players. So he's done an investigation. He's trying to get to the bottom of how the jersey came about, how it was approved, etc. So we'll get more details off Bulldog later, but here's a picture of the front page of Hugh Jackman, who was apparently sent a jersey a couple of weeks ago to model it. So even he knew about it, but the players had no idea.
I just missed the mark on that, didn't I? It could have been such a powerful thing. And then now women in league round has been overshadowed by the dramas of the jumper. So, yeah, it's a rock and a hard place for those guys at the moment.
And on the back pages of the papers, the Telegraph, ticket to pride, Manly forced to search over the rainbow in the Herald. Manly bring in next-gen Fulton amid fears of boycott backlash. So looking to their team, and they've named, as Loz mentioned before, a couple of debutants on the wing. 28-year-old Fijian, Pio Seki, who played for Fiji in their loss to Papua New Guinea in rep round at Campbelltown. He came off the bench in that game. Has been playing rugby league over in France in recent times as well. And New South Wales Cup winger Alfred Smalley, 22 years of age. So they're set to debut tomorrow night against the Roosters. But the real, I guess, nice story is James Seguiaro, who'll play in the 14 jersey. He's set to play his first NRL game since 2019 when he tested positive to a banned substance that he said came about after using, I think it was his flatmate's blender. Bob Fulton's grandson, Zach, his 18th man as well. Jake Trbojevic back after COVID against a Roosters side, Loz, that will have Joey Manu and Lindsay Collins back. But tough ask. And looking at the market, with Tab for the game, naturally the market moved considerably off the back of all this. And the Roosters, in fact, it's moved even further. When I looked last night, the line was 14.5. It's now 18.5. Manly $6.20 and the Roosters are $1.12 for this one.
Yeah, look, it's hard to see anything but a Roosters victory. I think Manly have produced their best football when they've played at home. And it's still a decent side. you know, when they've got the likes of Cherry Evans and Kieran Foran in there and, you know, Dylan Walker in the centres, you've got Jake Trbojevic in the forwards, but just comparing it to the Roosters team, who are starting to get a bit of momentum at this stage, they've got plenty of strike out wide. Weira Hargreaves is back. Lindsay Collins is back up front. Gives them a bit of forward depth. They can move Lodge back to the bench. Look as though they're timing their run nicely, but it'll be a big performance from Manly. It'll be a massive performance there to win this game.
Oh, huge. Also, the back page of the Herald, and we certainly shouldn't gloss over this, and we've touched on it already, but one of the greatest rugby league speeches, the headline there yesterday, Des Hasley yesterday, you know, so statesman-like and emotive, and he apologised for, in his words, a significant mistake by the football club. He noted the lack of consultation on the call to wear the Pride jersey. He acknowledged the hurt, though, that it's caused to the groups they were trying to support, and that he shares the desire for the game to be inclusive. He's concerned for the welfare of those seven players that have stood down, but he and Daly Cherry Evans were adamant it's still a united playing group. And when asked why he and Cherry Evans were fronting the media and not club management to offer this apology, Hasler said, well, you'll have to talk to management about that. I can't answer that. So there's a nice rift between the front office and the playing group. And there is a bit of a state of flux there at the moment because they've got Tony Mestrov starting on Monday. So he hasn't started yet. The new CEO, Stephen Humphreys, left the club, what, a few months ago, a few weeks, several weeks ago. And their chairman and obviously in the ownership, Scott Penn, is in New York. So you know, who's there to basically be the figurehead at front office at the moment? Pretty much no one, I suppose, at least here in Australia, to have been able to front up there yesterday. So Hasler and Cherry Evans put their hands up. But I think that speech, I think it's been across the game, just praised.
Oh, I think he was great. As I said earlier this morning, I thought Des was terrific. A man in a crisis. He's been through a lot of scenarios through his footballing career and as a coach, and this is the first time he's have to encounter something as big as this. It divides people. Everyone's got a different opinion. He felt comfortable saying that he was there supporting the club's decision to be inclusive and to have diversity in the game, but he was also talking about the challenges that these players are now under that have decided to stand down for religious beliefs and the amount of pressure that they will be put under and the stress that they will feel. So Desi's quite a warmth coach. He likes to put his arm around his players. He likes to have strong relationships with them. And unfortunately, the players have been put in a situation where it's a no-win situation for some of them.
Mm. Also back page of the Herald, Berkey, support's growing to bring Eddie back home. So yeah. Scott Wisemantle, the Wallabies' assistant who worked with Eddie over there in England, says he'd love to have him back in Australia, particularly heading towards, of course, the 2027 World Cup, which we host. He isn't sure what capacity in, as Wisemantle also had full praise for Dave Rennie and Michael Hooper as well, by the way. But Eddie Jones certainly just made an impression. The thing we love about Eddie, I mean, you know him better than most, his ability to sell the game, which has been severely lacking in this country for years. Let's face it.
Even the "don't go call me a traitor" type call, you know, like he sparked up at that. It put for all the wrong reasons. It put rugby sort of, you know, front and center for a couple of days. But look, you know, he's a professional coach now, and that's the way of the world. You know, we saw Farrell coaching Ireland the other day to success over in New Zealand. So it doesn't matter what passport you have these days. You can go coach if you're the best candidate for doing that. And remember, you know, going way back to 2007, he was an assistant with South Africa when they won in France under Jake White. So he's been around, you know, that international teams for a long period of time. And remember, he's been director of rugby up in Suntory in Japan for years. He's, you know, spent time in the UK. He's done provincial here with ACT and Queensland as well. So he's a well-travelled coach, and he has an ability to find something extra in players, that's for sure.
he's a bit mad, isn't he?
Massively mad.
Yeah.
Like he's,
what are your memories?
He's 5 foot two, and he can shred people like the best of them. You know, you got 6 foot eight second rowers. You know, thinking they're you're made of granite, and go have a quick review of your game with Eddie, and you walk out like about 3 foot two type thing. It's like then you got to try and pump him back up again. He's diligent is the word. You know, he leaves the old quote, leaves no stone unturned. There's emails being sent, at 3, 4 in the morning because he's watching games, that kind of stuff. So his assist, I feel for his assistants more than anything else, because when you go into a game, you get armed with everything to be able to beat the opposition. And I think that's his strength.
Now, Dick Fane coming up shortly from the States. Just before that, though, the judiciary last night. And by the way, Dogs forward Corey Waddell copped 5 weeks for eye-gouging Tino Fasuamalawi. He was hurt by the still photos that were tendered by the NRL prosecution that certainly the judiciary panel didn't look favourably upon. And Dale Finucane of Cronulla had his charge downgraded from 3 to 2, a grade 2 dangerous contact charge, but still got suspended for 2 weeks for that hit on Stephen Crichton. Now, just on the text line, hi boys, just a quick note on the judiciary last night. I believe the NRL is trying to make a statement in regards to Waddell, not to put the hand or fingers near the face/eye. Didn't look like much to me. I still can't understand the Finucane suspension. No penalty awarded at the time of the incident. Just looked a head clash, says DC from Greenacre. And morning, boys. So does the Finucane decision last night mean that any head clash results in a suspension for the defending player? They have lost the plot, says Peely from Sawtell. And Dale Finucane, in his remarks after, echoed a similar sentiment. Said, well, this is now a precedent. He says he said he was extremely disappointed with the outcome, given it was an accidental offence. And while he empathises with Stephen Crichton over the outcome and the laceration of his ear, it has set a precedent for our game moving forward. And that he was quite surprised with the outcome, given that it was an accidental offence, and given that our game hasn't seen anything sanctioned before for accidental head contact, and that he was optimistic. And that he didn't think that the laceration would come into it. So clearly the injury is the reason. Well, it's you wonder if Stephen Crichton wasn't injured, whether he would have been suspended.
Yeah, again, I think it was proven last night that it was a head clash. It wasn't shoulder. And my concern was there might have been a bit of shoulder there. And if there was, he was in trouble. I thought he would have faced some time on the sideline. So it's a difficult one. Now, given that it was accidental head clash in my mind. But people will argue he didn't have to run out of the line like that. But I would argue that he's trying to have good line speed. Yeah. He's getting off his line to inspire his teammates to put a shot on Crichton.
That's what you get told to do by the coach.
That's
exactly right.
Ridiculous. So what, just because he went hard and they had a head clash,
so there's
can't
mitigating,
do that anymore.
There's mitigating circumstances. My concern was if he made contact with the shoulder to the head, he was going to miss some games. The fact that it was a head clash on head clash, I think he's right. This has probably set a precedent going forward. If you rush out of the line like that,
And you miss,
and you have that head contact, they will deem that as being careless. I don't think it will be in a normal situation where you just move forward to make a tackle, and you're running at me, and I make a head clash. Mm. I think that'll be okay. But I think if you, as a defender, come out of the line with intent, regardless of what happens, if you make head contact, they might deem that to be careless and you may be then at risk of spending a week or two on the side.
But oftentimes when you do shoot out of the line, it's not a perfect hit. Because
late footwork.
You're correct.
Or something may happen
they
to
look
the
up
attacking
and go,
player.
They look up and go, I've got someone hot.
I've
got
to move.
I've got to move. And it's a reactionary hit. Yeah, from that as well. Yeah, but they're right. He wants to inspire his team. The coaches call it, or you call it like the rabbit, let's get out there and get one out in front to put some pressure on, trying to maintain them behind the advantage line. Yeah.
How are you, Dick?
Doing well, boys. Calm before the storm. Training camp's opening up in the NFL very, very shortly. Seattle opens up tomorrow, so our focus is going to be squarely on the National Football League for, about the next 7 months in a row. Something like that.
Can't wait. And Arizona has paid It's quarterback Kyler Murray, what, 5 years and up to $230 million all up. And in that contract, I note some reports that he has a condition to study film for 4 hours, what is it, a week? Yeah. I mean, that's extraordinary. You don't, isn't that what quarterbacks do anyway?
Well, not Kyler Murray, and that's why they put it in there. So, yes, you have, you know, quarterbacks are all across the board as far as how cerebral they are. I mean, you go from one end of the spectrum, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, I mean, those type of guys, Drew Brees, those guys are synonymous with homework. I mean, that's they overprep. But then you go to the other end of the spectrum and you have the guys normally that rely on their athleticism a lot, right? Because the game has always come so easy to them ever since they were 7 years old. You know, they're running around with a football in their hand and nobody can catch them. They're like, well, this game's easy. I just have to run away from everyone. And Kyler Murray is so electric that he was able to do that in high school. He was able to do that in college. He was able to do that in the first couple of years in the NFL. But now it's starting to catch up with him a little bit. Because you can't just be a running quarterback and succeed at the highest level in the NFL. Just ask Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's in the same boat. Tremendous athlete, tremendous runner. But when he has to throw the ball in championship-level situations, he has not shown the ability to do it consistently. Kyler Murray in championship situations, when he has been forced, when defenses start to confuse him a little bit, he has not been good down the stretch. And that's what the Cardinals are trying to do with this homework clause, is say, okay, we've got all the athleticism, and we think if he just puts a little bit of extra work in it to the mental side of the game, we could get a top five quarterback in the NFL that we are paying for. Because right now, guys, Kyler Murray is not a top five quarterback in the NFL. He's a next five quarterback in the NFL. And in order to get to be a top five, his intellect and his knowledge of the game, while it's never going to reach his athleticism, it's got to get closer.
So basically, Dick, they're paying on potential. And are you to pay that type of money and to invest in a quarterback who has question marks about his work ethic, that's a big risk, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think, you know, it's interesting how you look at this fact that it was released. And the Cardinals had to know that this clause was going to get out in the media, right? And so there's two schools of thought. The one school of thought is, well, that's just idiotic. That's embarrassing to the club that they're paying $46 million a year for a guy that they don't trust to do the necessary homework. It's embarrassing towards Kyler Murray. But then the flip side of that, and an interesting theory is that Arizona wanted this to get out because they want constant pressure, constant social media pressure, constant media pressure, asking Kyler Murray on a weekly basis, did you do your homework this week? Maybe they feel that type of peer pressure is what's going to get Kyler to really take his studies seriously.
I'll tell you what, if you get him paid $230, I'd be opening the laptop every day of the week. you mentioned Lamar Jackson, Dick, there. Is he going to go again with the Ravens? Are they going to pick him up?
Yeah, and you know the interesting thing about Lamar Jackson is that he is his own agent. So, I don't think he's got any, I don't think he's got a law degree. I don't think he's got a sports administration degree. So he's just going to basically slot himself in there along with these quarterbacks. The question is, again, kind of like it was with Kyler Murray, while Lamar has had more playoff success than Kyler Murray, he hasn't been deep in the playoffs. I don't remember Lamar Jackson ever playing in a Super Bowl. So he's been a really good MVP-level player, but again, it's with his athleticism. And as that athleticism begins to wane, like it always will, look at Russell Wilson, perfect example. Mm. Russell is nowhere near the athlete now that he was 5 years ago. Lamar is going to be nowhere near the athlete in 5 years that he is right now. Does he have the rest of the game to truly be a top five quarterback in the NFL? And just like Kyler, he's not right now. He's in that second five. And so Lamar Jackson is going to have to negotiate. I think the Ravens will do the same thing as the Cardinals did, and that is pay him eventually. I don't know if he'll get as much as Kyler. It should be right around the same amount, and I imagine it'll happen relatively soon.
Well, only 5 or 6 weeks to go till the start of the season. Bring it on. But in the Major League, in the baseball, we spoke last week just ahead of the All-Star game, but we've got a big Subway Series coming up in New York between the Yankees and the Mets, both leading their divisions. Dick, how do you expect it to play out? And for these two teams heading towards the playoffs, who's in better shape?
Well, the Yankees looked great until they came out of the break and got swept in two games by the Astros. That was and the Astros did it in impressive fashion. The Astros really look like right now they're playing the best baseball. I wouldn't say they've had the best season thus far. I would still give that edge to the New York Yankees, who are a couple of games ahead of Houston in the standings and clearly better in the run differential. That's something you look at as well is, okay, how are you winning these games? Are you winning these games decisively? And the New York Yankees have historic run differential. They're a plus 200 in just 95 games. So on average, they're winning every game by more than two runs. The Mets are six games behind the Yankees overall in the standings, so still within a shot, but their run differential is only a plus 82. So the Yankees have shown themselves to be the better team, but the Mets clearly right now are the best team. It's probably second best team in the National League, which I don't think overall is as strong as the American League. I don't see six, seven really good teams in the National League like I do in the American League. But it would make it for an interesting series. I think most people would rather have Dodgers-Yankees than Mets-Yankees. I remember the Subway Series back in 2000 when it was Mets-Yankees. The ratings just plummeted because basically the whole country was just like, who cares about two New York teams? Click, I'm turning this off. So I don't know if Major League Baseball necessarily wants Mets and Yankees because it didn't work the last time ratings-wise.
What about the NBA, Dick? What's happening with Kevin Durant?
Well, Boston is the latest team that is out there. It was really quiet, strangely quiet, for about 2 or 3 weeks from the moment that we found out that Kevin Durant wanted out, and we thought that there was going to be a flurry of offers, and we thought something was going to be done relatively quickly, and it just hadn't. I mean, it just died the whole month of July. And then all of a sudden, yesterday, I believe it was, maybe the day before yesterday, that this comes out that, Boston might be an interesting suitor. Boston wants to give up Jaylen Brown. Sounds like the Nets want Jaylen Brown as well as Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart and some draft picks. There might be some middle ground there depending on how many draft picks that go. But, that's going to be definitely a situation to watch. Can you imagine Kevin Durant alongside Jason Tatum on a well-coached team that just went to the championship and was right there with Golden State in that championship series? That could be really, really intriguing.
Dick, WNBA, we saw it this morning, the controversial Liz Cambage. What do you know about this one here, the LA parting ways with the Australian basketball?
Well, I know that she's looked disinterested the whole season.
Yeah.
I mean, Liz Cambage, you just watch her play, and she's a very talented. I mean, she's bigger and stronger than the rest. But there's just times, and I've made comments on in the broadcast on it. I'm just like, look at Liz. I mean, she's just walking down the floor. She just does not appear to be interested in the game. And then for about a 5 minute stretch, she'll turn it on and she'll hit some shots and she'll block some shots and when she is dialed in and interested, she's dominant. But she just, I don't know if it's a lack of being in proper condition, or if it's just being disinterested and not happy with her position. But there's a lot more in Liz Cambage than she's showing on the floor right now. So maybe she'll do what Tina Charles did. And Tina Charles went to Seattle, and she just had an amazing performance in the last game. Double-double, had 20 and 10 at halftime. So maybe Liz Cambage lands on a playoff contender here in the next week and helps them out in the playoffs.
Thank you so much, Dick.
See you, boys. We'll talk to you next week.
Give us a call, 1353 53. Our guest co-host this morning, the great Matthew Burke. Wallaby great. Some would know him as the Channel 10 sports news reader as well.
That's great.
Yeah, Sandra, by the way.
Yeah, Sandra as well. Good. Sandra as well.
She was gloating after Origin.
Do you know what? I had a week off, and so because it becomes very territorial, and when they line you up with the suits and that kind of stuff and what you have to wear. And she just goes rogue and wears red, obviously, every day. And then so I had something that was, you know, had a shade of maroon through it or something. And I went, no chance, you know, blue suit, blue shirt, blue tie. And but I missed this one. I was away. It was school holiday, so I missed it. But I could imagine she perhaps could have been a little bit unbearable in her victory.
Is there many Queenslanders that work for Channel 10 in Sydney?
Yeah, there are a few.
There's a few.
Yeah, I remember one of the boys used to blow up because you know when we were at very much a Sydney bulletin, and she'd be wearing you know red. And we're like, hang on, you're supposed to be going for New South Wales because when they go to Queensland. If it's Queensland, like, you know, like, it's like, you know,
well, oh, mate, you wouldn't be seen dead in a blue shirt.
There's a bit of banter, let's go. Yeah. And was like, no, you will be wearing, you know, maroon or red. Yeah. And then that's stock standard, you know. Even if even if Laurie Daly was reading the news up there, you'd have been wearing red, you know. Yeah. Like, so it's quite parochial. I love it. It's an interesting one, that's for sure.
It is the Women's Euro semi-finals. And at the moment, England are leading Sweden 4-0.
Oh, wow.
Late in that fixture as well this morning. That fixture being played, that semi-final at Bremel Lane in Sheffield, I'm pretty sure Bremel Lane is.
I don't know. I've never heard of Bremel Lane.
Bremel Lane. Sheffield United's home ground, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, England looking good for that one. Yeah, it's in Sheffield. There you go.
You know your soccer, mate.
Also, we've got Sri Lanka well and truly ahead of Pakistan in that second test at Gaul. It stumps on day three. They rolled Pakistan for 231 in their first dig, and Sri Lanka in their second innings, 5 for 176. They made 378 in their first innings. So they're leading by 323 with 5 wickets in hand in that match. Give us a call, 1353 53 on the text line, 0419 767272. Last night, Corey Waddell caught 5 weeks for eye gouging Tino Fa'asua Malawi. The still photos. He was asked to explain what was going on in a couple of still photos tendered by the NRL prosecution, which showed, you know, his fingers very close to the eyes of Tino, and that certainly hurt him. And Dale Finucane had his charge downgraded from a grade 3 to a grade 2, but he's still suspended for 2 weeks for that hit on Stephen Crichton on Saturday night. And in regards to Manly, this is Mark has written this. Laurie, I heard you say the Manly players will be proud to wear their jumper, that jumper. Will they? Or are they just wearing because they have to? Regards, Mick. Let's hope you read this text because you never read the others. Mick, Mark.
Mick, I'll tell you what, mate. They will be proud because they had a choice. And as we saw, there were 7 players that declined the opportunity to play in that jersey. So the other players could have done the same thing. So they're obviously proud to go out there and represent Manly and wear that jumper. I don't think they would have been told they had to do it. I think they respect inclusion and diversity, and they are wanting to go out there and play in that jersey. So I don't think the players didn't have a choice, because as we've seen, they did have a choice. They weren't consulted, and the club needed to consult the players. And again, we spoke yesterday and this morning about the players are entitled to make their own mind up, which they've done. But the players, and after hearing Daly Cherry Evans speak yesterday on behalf of the players, he said that they'll be very proud when they run out there tomorrow night against the Roosters. And let's hope they can give a good performance of themselves as well.
We've got B-Man on the line. G'day, B-Man.
Yeah, good morning. Morning, lads. Thanks for taking the call. Laurie sort of stole a bit of my thunder just before the news when because I was going to bring up about, you know, Manly's hierarchy of being vilified in this, but I think the NRL hierarchy need to be vilified as well. Because, in my opinion, you know, the NRL, rather stamping this jersey, has hijacked their own agenda for the weekend, which is the Women in Leagues round.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I'm sure the NRL must have known about this.
Well, they just can't just produce a jumper and then let the players run out without the NRL double checking. Mm. You know, like I'm with the previous caller you had regarding the jerseys. You know, like we rightly celebrate Anzac Day for the fallen, and of course a lot of old rugby league players also fought for Australia. We celebrate the Indigenous community because the magnificent effort they've done in like producing so many wonderful Indigenous players. And we also celebrate the women in rugby league, the players, the mums that run the tuck shops. But when it comes to the, you know, Manly and the NRL hijacking the Women Leagues round with this jumper. It's like, well, the NRL supports the LGBTI community by putting a float in every year for the Mardi Gras. Now, if Manly want to go one step further and support that community, well, they can put a float in the Mardi Gras. To me, it's made the whole Women in Leagues round and the whole agenda very divisive.
Mm.
And you know, like, I've just got one more question for everybody to ponder. We've got seven guys of Pacific Islander culture, and their religion and their culture is obviously a problem for them wearing this jumper. And everybody accepts that. But what would have happened if we had a Caucasian Manly bloke, an eighth bloke, who decided to stand down? What could he possibly say? And the fingers being pointed at that guy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, we can't prejudge
your belief.
What people's
Everyone's
beliefs
entitled
are.
Yeah. To do what they want to do. Mm. Now, I don't know what religion it is at the moment. You know, we haven't heard from the players, and I don't know whether we will or not. But look, I don't know about the NRL. They're saying they didn't know. So, and it is Women in League round. I think they may have known they were going to wear the jumper at some stage, and they may have known about the jumper, but I don't know whether they knew it was going to be produced in this round.
Thank you, B-Man. We've got plenty of calls here. Morning, Rod.
Boys, how are we?
Not too bad, mate.
Good, mate.
Lovely. Still not rating the Sharks, mate?
No, I think they're a good side, Rod. I don't think they win the comp, though, but I think they're a good side.
So thanks, Lowe. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. You say that. I don't think they win the comp.
Yep, no, I don't think they will, mate. There you go.
Well, they're certainties now.
Possibly.
Anyway, listen, this Dale Finucane thing, if you listen to what the prosecutor said, he said that Finucane needed to have to rush out of the line and put his body in a better position to make a proper tackle. Okay, so therefore, Mr. Prosecutor, you have basically outlawing now any chance of any bloke rushing out of the line to put a big on hit to inspire his team. Kind of like Paul Gallen throwing the punch in Origin, that it'll be a part of the game, which dies. Okay, NRL, if you want that to die in the game, come out and bloody well say it. I'm not happy. Enjoy your day, guys.
Good on you, Rod.
No, thanks, Rod. And, well, Dale Finucane himself said after that hearing last night, said this sets a new precedent, and it's hard to argue. Matt, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Have you got us?
Got you, mate.
Oh, there we go. Mate, I just wanted to speak about the Manly thing. Being on the Northern Beaches, I've got someone very close to me who's openly gay. He's been gay for a good number of years now, but he was also one of the toughest footy players growing up. He just made a decision that time of his life that he gave up footy and went on with his life, and now he's in a happy relationship and everything. He's a Manly membership holder. He loves them, and, you know, he loves the game, but he now is just absolutely devastated by all this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saw it as a great opportunity for inclusion for everyone and for the players to come out for their own rights, and I'm not holding on to that, whatever, but it just, these actions affect people that we might not know, we may know, but it affects a lot of people. And I just can't help think that there might be a young kid in one of their communities, that boy or girl, that, you know, idolises these players, looks up to them every week, and might be struggling with their own identification or, you know, sexuality. And now, that's, mate, then they're forever going to be in the shadows.
And you're pretty much, Matt, echoing everything Ian Roberts said yesterday, who had a media conference after Des Hasler and Daly Cherry-Evans fronted the media. And you know, Ian Roberts was saying he'd just love to just sit around with these players and have a conversation. But he echoed exactly what you're saying, and, you know, thoughts to your friend as well.
Well, we've never walked in, well, I certainly haven't walked in Ian Roberts' shoes or someone that is gay. But he said yesterday that teenagers are dying, kids are killing themselves in the suburbs, they're taking their lives because they think the world hates them for being gay.
Mm.
And he said that things like this, doesn't help.
How much does it set it back, the game? This decision, albeit a decision that the club perhaps got wrong.
It's something that you don't need. It's something that you don't need. And the club was trying to do the right thing, what they thought was right. What it comes back to, though, is you talk about being inclusive. You need to ask and get support and see where the players are at and feeling, because they're the ones that are going out there pulling on that jersey and they're going to feel comfortable. So it's just a lack of communication.
Yeah.
You know, and give the players time. And this should have been done in the pre-season, off-season. You talk to the playing group about, special rounds and these are the occasions we're going to represent and what are your thoughts and feelings about this? And so you get a greater understanding and, talk about the, having a pride round or representing, the gay community. Get a guy like Ian to come in and talk to the players about what it meant to him to put on the Manly shirt and what it would mean for the club to go out there and play in this jersey to represent
and support
hundreds of thousands of people. So I just think it's been handled wrong by Manly with that lack of consultation, but I think their heart was in the right place.
From the Sydney Morning Herald, Adam Pengilly, good morning to you.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys.
We have another runner in the Everest and the tab in its slot going with Lost and Running once again.
Yeah, no surprise, was it, Jared? He's been the horse that's been around the mark trying to win a Group 1 race for the last 12 to 18 months. We know he's won the Hunter. He's been obviously well-performed in the race last year, running fourth behind a couple of the big guns. So you'd like to think with natural progression, he's going to come up and be a real main player in the race this year. So I know John O'Shea's given him a nice steady build-up. He revolved his whole campaign just around the one race this year and try and get him right for the Everest on the day. And what do you boys think? Because your Christmas bonuses rely on running well in the Everest.
Do they?
Yeah,
I didn't see that in the email. No,
in the T's and C's.
Look, I think I said to you yesterday. I'm Marzu, but Lost and Running's only had 14 starts in its career, so this could be its prep.
You'd like to think if he's going to be at his absolute best at some stage throughout his career, I'm going to think it's probably going to be in the next 6 to 12 months. Mm. So this spring, given he's lightly raced and he's maturing, he's learning his ring craft, I suppose, when putting in those terms, a little bit more this spring and probably the autumn next year might be the absolute peak of his career. So whether that's good enough to topple a nature strip or an Eduardo, we're not sure yet. We're going to find out pretty soon.
Adam, you spoke about bonus before and Meadows is massive around Christmas time. What about Victoria Racing's spring bonus scheme? Talk us through that.
Yeah, so they've announced some pretty lucrative bonuses, Berkey, to try and for some of these horses to try and race almost exclusively in Victoria throughout the spring carnival. So winners of specific lead-up races heading towards the Cox Plate, the Victoria Derby, the Empire Rose Stakes, the Daly Champion Sprint, as well as the Kennedy Champions Mile, all be eligible to win a $1 million bonus if they can win those big races on the day after winning one of the lead-ups on the way through. So we've seen it work in Sydney, I suppose, in the last couple of years with Racing New South Wales offering some bonuses for some horses or connections to keep their horses in Sydney. I think Think It Over was a big beneficiary last spring, wasn't he? Obviously winning those Hill Stakes and Craven Stakes all the way through the spring, and that kept him away from Melbourne. And Racing Victoria's hitting back with some bonuses of their own, so no one's going to be short of a quid down there in Victoria if they can win a few of those big lead-up races on the way to the majors in the spring.
What'd you make of yesterday's trials?
Yeah, Forbidden Love was great, Laurie. I thought she'd come back in really good style. I know it's only a synthetic trial track, so you can't get too carried away over 1,000 metres, but I thought she looked really impressive. And Michael Friedman obviously made some comments after the trial saying they want to try and get her into the Everest if they possibly can. So she'll kick off probably in the Missile Stakes in a few weeks' time and then head towards the Winx Stakes. Just looking at some of the, or just listening to some of the long-range predictions for the weather forecast the next few months, the Bureau's predicting a lot of rain all the way through to November. So we know that Forbidden Love's obviously a superior wet track horse. She's great on that sort of heavy ground. So maybe she wouldn't be the worst place. We do get a wet Everest again this year, a couple of weeks out. A connection might, a slot holder might want to pick her up because we know that she probably, I'd say in my estimation, still a rung or two below the likes of Nate Strip and Eduardo. But on a wet track, it might bring it back into play. So wait and see how she comes through. And Best of Board obviously trialled there yesterday. First hit out for Casey Fogg, and he wasn't asked to do much, just travelling wide under James McDonald, but looked really stylish as well.
In Warwick Farm today, like one at big odds.
Yeah, this horse I think is flying under the radar here, Jared. Race 4, number 2, Concocted. I thought he was okay at Gosford last start. And you go back through some of his form last campaign, last spring, sorry, behind the likes of Tiger Malay and Coast Watch. I love the outside gate there today. I think it's going to be a day we're going to be miles off the fence at Warwick Farm with a rail true on a really heavy track. So Race 4, number 2, Concocted might be able to run some sort of race at value later today at Warwick Farm.
$18 the win and $4.40 the place. What did you make of yesterday in the news conference at Manly?
Des. What a genius. Is there a better Raider, Laurie, when he wants to be?
Yeah, he was good. I said earlier this morning, Adam, I think in a crisis you want a guy like a Des Hasler, a Wayne Bennett, a Craig Bellamy or a Tim Sheen, someone that's been around and you know, fronted up to a lot of things and delivered under pressure. And he was sensitive. He had empathy for a lot of people. And his delivery was fantastic.
Yeah, we know Laurie Des is this wacky sort of coach who has all these, you know, bizarre methods, so to speak. We know he's railing against the referees all the time and making complaints, that, you know, behind closed doors. But that was the real Des yesterday, wasn't it? The way he handled himself, and he empathised with a lot of different groups throughout society, including his own players, obviously, who are not going to play tomorrow night against the Roosters. So I thought that was just a masterclass from Des, and probably showed the true character and true person that he is. So I thought massive kudos to him. And now it's hopefully down to the football tomorrow night. I suppose it'll be another day in the news cycle of this sort of keeping going for another 24 to 48 hours. Once we get the game out of the way, we hopefully concentrate a bit more on the football and see how Manly go. But that team that was named yesterday at 4 o'clock on Team List Tuesday was certainly with a few unrecognisable names. They've got a massive, massive plus. What price are they, Drew?
They've blown out again, even post the seven players standing down. But at the moment, $1.12 the Roosters, $6.20 Manly, plus 17.5 at the line.
Yeah, and they're only, what were they, $2.20 or something before all the players put out. So that's a massive market drift. So anyway, we'll see. It opens up an opportunity for a few guys who aren't heralded and to make their NRL debuts, have a crack there tomorrow night. Looking forward to that, and we'll see how it plays out.
Good on you, Adam.
See you, boys.